Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Wednesday, November 8, 2017. An aid worker is killed in Torit during a shootout by a soldier.
Five patients were brought into the hospital. One was brought in dead and the other one died on arrival when the doctor was trying to resuscitate, but then he could not make it, he passed on. The other one sustained gunshot injury in the right leg, in the knee.
And former South Sudan Army Chief Paul Malong continues to resist President Kiir's order to disarm.
The president had issued an order for that these forces should go back to their respective positions, and that was resisted by the former Chief of General Staff. This is what brought about all this tension.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Police in the Imatong state capital, Torit, say at least three people, including an aid worker, were killed in two separate shootouts last night. Officials say one of the incidents involved a drunken policeman who opened fire at a nightclub. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
Torit authorities have identified the policeman who opened fire at a local nightclub Tuesday night as Private Joseph Ohisa Nimir, a bodyguard for the Imotong Estate Physical Infrastructure Minister John Savio Otuor. Francis Olum, the brother of one of the victims, rushed to Torit Hospital along with other relatives of the victims. Olum says his brother got into an argument with the assailant at a phone charging shop. A few minutes later, Olum says the assailant returned with an AK-47. Speaking in Arabic, Olum says Nimir shot and killed his brother before shooting randomly into the crowd of the nightclub goers.
He got my brother at a shop smoking shisha. He started shooting. A girl was nearby lying down. Another boy came across and he shot him dead. Those who were watching a film at the club all took cover as he sprayed bullets around, but none of them were injured.
Olum says the police arrived about 10 minutes later. He says his brother died at the scene a short time later. John Isaac, the Torit State Hospital Medical Director, says the wounded include a 14-year-old boy and a 20-year-old woman, both of whom are being treated at the hospital.
Five patients were brought into the hospital. One was brought in dead and the other one died on arrival when the doctor was trying to resuscitate, but then he could not make it, he passed on. The other one sustained gunshot injury in the right leg, in the knee, with open fracture. He was also bleeding, but the bleeding was arrested.
Isaac says the others sustained minor injuries and are still under treatment. Imotong State Police Inspector Jeremiah Fadire Otoriang says the suspect was acting under the influence of alcohol.
Five people who are shot by a policeman called Private Joseph Ohisa Nimir. Two of the victims died in the hospital and three are now under treatment in the hospital.
Otoriang says the second shootout occurred in Torit's Korton neighborhood, in which a driver with the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization was shot dead inside his house by unknown assailants about 11 p.m.
The victim who is killed in Kai Korton is one of the drivers of UN FAO. The criminals are now in the town targeting the UN or organization's officials who are in the town. Their aim is just to take money from anybody.
Otoriang says police are still searching for the killer. Imotong State Governor Tobiolo Alberio Oromo confirmed that a member of his police force has been arrested in connection with last night's violence and that he will be tried in a court of law.
The suspect, of course, knowing that he has gone wrong, he threw his gun down and he surrendered. Now he's in the police.
And Oromo says earlier this week, armed men looted Red Cross and World Food Program vehicles along the Torit-Kapueta Highway. VOA got the audio courtesy of a local journalist in Torit. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Standoff continues with former Army Chief General Paul Malong, who is under house arrest in the capital, Juba. South Sudan Information Minister says community elders are mediating talks between Malong and government officials, as we hear from Wake Simon Wudu.
The government on Saturday deployed soldiers to the route leading to the airport and around General Malong's residence after he resisted a presidential order to release a platoon of 30 soldiers guarding him. Dozens of well-armed soldiers can be seen standing on airport road on the approach to Malong's home beginning around Tomping Road near the former Beijing Hotel. When motor vehicles or border borders get close, the soldiers raise their hands and direct traffic away. Following a six-hour cabinet meeting chaired by President Salva Kiir yesterday, Information Minister Michael Makuei told the reporters that General Malong was informed several days ago that he must turn over his bodyguards to authorities.
General Malong, of course, when he was relieved, you know what he did. And when he came back here, he was allowed to go into his house and was allowed to stay with his forces. But of course, being a former chief of general staff, you cannot be allowed to continue with your platoon in your house.
Makuei says the Kiir administration decided to deploy soldiers around Malong's residence after he refused to obey the order to release his bodyguards.
The president had issued an order for that these forces should go back to their respective positions, and that was resisted by the former chief of general staff. This is what brought about all this tension.
Former deputy governor of Lol State, Lual Dao, yesterday told the VOA South Sudan in Focus that the standoff may escalate to another conflict if not peacefully resolved. Lucy Ayaka, Malong's wife, also told the VOA on Monday that her husband's house has been surrounded and he cannot get out. Although she confirms peace talks between Malong and government are ongoing and are being mediated by community leaders, there has been no breakthrough. Juba residents appear relaxed but have expressed concerns about the deployment of forces, saying it poses a public security threat. Some roads near the deployment are not passable as soldiers have blocked commuters' access to them. Malong's house arrest and the subsequent deployment of forces has dominated media platforms across South Sudan, but Makuei insists the deployment is normal in the capital.
This is a normal security hiccups, and this is not new. These are things that happen in any country.
The United States Embassy in Juba on Monday posted a security alert on its website to American citizens due to the deployment of soldiers. The message reads, quote, "Although there is an increased military presence in a number of locations, the security situation in Juba is unchanged. The embassy is fully operational," end of quote. But the embassy alert also advises U.S. citizens to, quote, "review your personal security plans, remain aware of your surroundings, including local events, and monitor local news stations for updates," end of quote. Makuei says talks continue to peacefully resolve the standoff with Malong.
"We don't want this thing to be handled militarily, because under the normal circumstances, it would have been a question of moving in the tanks and the whole thing is over, but we don't want that to happen. And this is why we are giving room for further contacts and interventions."
Makuei says he is confident the situation will be resolved soon. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Hundreds of internal displaced persons sheltering at a UN-run camp in Wau say they are ready to return home if authorities improve security in the area. The IDPs say they still don't feel safe enough to go back to their homes because Wau town is not safe. Local leaders say they are working hard to improve security in the town. Michael Atit files this report for VOA from Juba.
The UN mission in South Sudan, or UNMISS, organized a peaceful 5 kilometers march in Wau town yesterday under the theme, "Let's return home to build peace and unity in our communities." Hundreds of IDPs marched from the UN protection site to Medan Rabita in Jebel Kheir neighborhood in Wau. Mustafa Tojan, the head of UNMISS in Wau, says his organization will soon organize a forum where IDPs can voice their concerns. Tojan told marchers, it is high time that IDPs at UNMISS camps be allowed to return home and live normal lives.
So the reason for this event is to get out of the classroom with workshops, small meetings, to talk to a bigger audience, to bring the government to meet the people, so that there will be dialogue between the two parties, so that there will be trust building and confidence building. There will be information sharing.
Tojan says UNMISS and other partners want to encourage people to voluntarily return to their homes. An IDP who prefers to be identified only as Magdalene for safety reasons says she is tired of living at UN camp because of its lack of freedom. Speaking in Arabic to the Catholic-owned Voice of Hope radio in Wau, Magdalene says the area is not yet safe to return home.
We don't need someone to tell us that we should go back to our home. We really need to go home. But every day or two, there are constant looting and killing and gunshots. This cannot encourage people to go home. We are not happy in the POC, but we have no option.
Another IDP, Monica Julio, says she does not even have a house to return to because her house was looted and destroyed. She says the looters removed the roof of her house. Speaking in Arabic, Julio wonders who is going to compensate her for damages.
I don't have a house to go and stay in. My house was looted and the roofs were taken and the wall is even demolished down. I have nowhere to go and stay. I have to stay in the POC till when security improves in the residential areas. I need to take care of my young kids.
Both Julio and Magdalene want Wau state officials to ensure that security improves in the residential areas. Speaking at the same event, Wau state peace and reconciliation advisor Awadia Yaqub says the state is working on establishing police stations across the town. Speaking in Arabic, Yaqub says the police will be equipped to respond to any threats to civilians.
We are looking at the bigger picture, and in every neighborhood, there will be a police station. This is a plan of the government which will provide you with security. I want to assure this, they will be provided with funds and mobility, which will allow them to quickly respond in any case.
Speaking in Arabic, Wau State Governor Angelo Taban Biagio told the IDPs his government is trying to restore peace and stability across the state.
We want to work together to bring the image of Wau town to its original place, a town that enjoys peace and stability. I'm sure this is going to happen.
Governor Taban urged the IDPs to go back to their homes and resume their normal life and said would guarantee their safety. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese youth say many people identify with their tribes in South Sudan. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can you make the best use of your time?
I do the right thing in the right place and with the right person.
I think sometimes when I help out, like volunteering, I would really love that. I use the best of my time by volunteering and also helping others besides the volunteering.
If I'm not doing basketball, I go maybe meet new friends. That is creating network. In the future, it will be helpful.
I'm a literature student, so I can use my time to read novels so that I get to know about things that I don't know.
The best use of my time is on educational processes. Like, I give the best time for reading, like in the morning. So most of the time I spend is on the reading program.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Participants at a youth forum in Juba this week say people in South Sudan have the tendency of turning to their ethnic groups for support during times of conflict. And the youth say that affects the spirit of nationalism. Some of the youth also said many South Sudanese tend to be more loyal to their tribes than the nation. Dimo Silva Aurelio has this report for VOA from Juba.
The conflict in South Sudan has claimed thousands of lives, displaced millions of people, and food insecurity has grown to epic proportions. It has also hurt the national sense of belonging. Those who gathered at Saturday's youth forum held at the Mansili Youth Cave in Juba warned unless South Sudanese leaders do something to unite ethnic groups, tribalism could tear the country apart. Panelist Richard Ruati says it is clear that any spirit of nationhood has been overtaken by a strong sense of tribal belonging.
If you have 64 tribes in South Sudan, and each tribe wants to have a rebel group, and we end up having 64 rebel groups in this country, I'm afraid. So can we stop creating rebel groups based on our tribes? Can we stop creating political parties based on our tribes? Can we stop going to church based on our tribes?
Ruati says the tendency to identify oneself on the basis of his or her tribal affiliation must end.
It's really tearing us apart because this is the only reason why we have become proud of our communities instead of the nation we are in. Your nationality cannot be your community. When you carry a passport, you carry a passport which says Republic of South Sudan. It doesn't say Republic of Murule. Eh? It doesn't say Republic of Zande. So it says Republic of South Sudan.
James Okuk, a political analyst at the University of Juba and a panelist at the forum, says South Sudanese must use their diverse tribes in a positive way to build a strong, cohesive nation. He says he believes that families and tribes should be used as nation-building units, not as tools to destroy the nation.
If we use this building unit negatively for destruction, we would dislike this country the way we dislike it today. So it depends. There is no one way. It depends on how we use our tribal identity. The good thing, if we have good heart, we have good heart with clear conscience, we should use our tribal unit for good things, not for bad things.
Okuk says South Sudanese were more united during the struggle with Khartoum government, but have turned against one another. After pushing away the common enemy they united against.
4 years after having turned against each other, we have seen how we have brought our country down to a situation that we are running away from it to become refugees. Now, it's so bad that we are regretting. So what will bring us back? We need to create what we call common interests, things that will unite us. One of it is education. We create common education where everybody from anywhere, we find ourselves in one school studying together, competing together of who will get number one, who will get number two, regardless of where you come from. The second one is common employment. After I graduate from a university, let the employment be common. Then the third one is common infrastructure in the country, where it can unite us, we use this infrastructure together. The third is common security. And then the fourth one is common protection, where we protect ourselves. Once we do this, then we will have a better nation.
A participant who prefers to be identified only as Kenyi for safety reasons says as long as South Sudanese leaders believe in their tribal groupings, the spirit of nationhood will die.
Nationalism, usually the citizens take it from their leaders. How practical is it in this country? What rhetoric do our leaders have that people will rally and support and then say, yeah, I will die for South Sudan? When it comes to the legal frameworks of this country, how much does it promote?
Daniel Allier, who works with the South Sudan Red Army Foundation, says young people must be the drivers of positive change in South Sudan.
We are the one dying. This is not the nation we want for our kids and our grandsons. Then we can reform from there as youth and give way for development. If we give way for development, it doesn't need anybody. It doesn't need the international community. It doesn't need the regional community. It doesn't need God to come. So we ourselves, as youth of South Sudan, that we pray to God, and God will hear our prayers, and let's put them into action.
More than 80 youth from different political parties, civil society groups, and university students attended the panel discussion, which was organized by the non-profit OK Africa Foundation. an organization that deals with raising awareness about the effects of tribalism within communities and answering the fundamental questions of national identity as opposed to tribal and regional belongings. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
An aid group that helps women farmers in Eastern Sudan is the winner of the UN Momentum for Change Award for tackling gender inequality and climate change. The group will receive the award at the COP23 this month. The leader of the group says Sudanese women can play an important role in food security and building resilience to climate change. Fatma Ahmed tells VOA's Kim Louise how the program works.
The women farmers in Sudan, they are working on the traditional agriculture sector with large numbers, like high percent of rural women. Their main activity is agriculture. They are being marginalized. They don't have any kind of training or something to help them to produce more. And during the last decade, as you know, there is changes in the environment and precipitation due to the climate change. So there are many years it has drought. So the women need to have some sort of new techniques to learn so they can boost their production and their productivity, because they were marginalized. I mean, they don't have any sort of help. This is why we find it is very important to give them some sort of training and help in terms of inputs, in terms of awareness raising, so they can produce more.
How has this project helped women gain more independence and gender equality?
When the women get some sort of strength in terms of the production, this is actually gives them better way of dealing with their problems. So they've been able to help their families' needs, their kids' needs, contribute to different ways in terms of gender equality, because most of those women farmers themselves get adult education, having information about their rights, women legal rights. All this gives them some sort of strength in terms of defending themselves, seeking and have better understanding how they can be equipped to fight for gender equality and to fight for their rights. It's empower women in terms of legal, economic, and political even rights.
What are some specific financial benefits that they have gained through this program?
Because most of those women are the head of household, so this is gives them some sort of empower in terms of economic empowerment, because when they have more production and more productivity, they have more income. Their income increase, and this gives them relief in terms of financial situation. Many of them being able to send their kids to school, especially their daughters, not only for primary education. Many of them being able to send their daughter to college, actually. This is one of the big benefits. Also, for the first time after this program, the women get some sort of relationship with before they don't have any link with the bank, so for credit. So through this program, women for the first time, especially when we started in 2006, this program, for the first time, women being connected to the bank and they have some sort of loan, the women did very good in terms of paying back. And this is give a good reputation, and the bank now trusted the women and give them some sort of credit. Also, it helps them to get agriculture machineries or tools, which helps them in their agriculture operation. And this is actually contributed to the increase of their production and their income.
And this will also help them be able to adapt to climate change.
Definitely, yes. Agriculture techniques the women learn give them information, because even the model of the agriculture, they been practiced from long time. It was traditional agriculture. So now the women change to new agriculture techniques, to conservative agriculture, which have deep plowing, water harvest. All these actually give them the techniques for adaptation. And this is the main reason for this program from the beginning.
That was Fatma Ahmed, the president of Zainab, an organization for Sudanese women farmers. She spoke with VOA's Kim Louise from Al-Gadarif state in Eastern Sudan. Kenya's election season is still not over, as three petitions were filed with the Supreme Court before the deadline Monday evening. The petitions target all sides in the presidential election controversy: the Electoral Commission, opposition leader Raila Odinga, and President Uhuru Kenyatta. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
Just when many Kenyans thought they had seen the end of the country's long election season, petitions were filed before a Monday night deadline to contest the process. Former lawmaker Harun Mwau filed a petition against the Electoral Commission, known as the IEBC, as well as its chairman and President Kenyatta. He is challenging the validity of the October 26th rerun presidential election, which he argues was held in violation of Supreme Court directions, the Constitution, and relevant electoral laws. An NGO called the Institute for Democratic Governance filed a petition against several officials in the opposition NASA coalition, including leader Raila Odinga, for engaging in what it called a carefully choreographed scheme to derail, undermine, and subvert the fresh election as announced by the Supreme Court. The IDG also accused the opposition of setting unreasonable demands for the Electoral Commission to meet. In addition, Halif Halifa and Njanjo Moi filed a petition against the IEBC, its chairman, Kenyatta, and the NASA coalition. Halifa is chairman of the Mombasa-based Muslims for Human Rights organization.
We filed this petition because there were a lot of irregularities in the last election and this election. When Supreme Court made a ruling and stated there were irregularities, because the procedures were not followed, and the Supreme Court was very categorical that elections is not an event, it's a process. Now, in this election, the process also were not followed. So it compelled us to go to court because we felt this election was not going to be free and fair.
Kenya's Supreme Court annulled the August presidential poll due to what it called irregularities and illegalities in the IEBC's transmission of results, and ordered the body to conduct fresh polls within 60 days. In the joint petition filed by Halifa and Njanjo Moi, Kenya's chairman of the International Commission of Jurists, they accused the IEBC of not conducting a fresh election per the Constitution and electoral laws, of failing to meet the general principle of universal suffrage, and of failing to hold elections free from violence and intimidation. However, Halifa says that he and Moi also want the opposition, listed as the fifth respondent, to explain why supporters disrupted polling in four opposition stronghold areas, where the IEBC was unable to conduct the voting exercise.
NASA did not try to prevent its voters not to disrupt the voting. Okay? This is an area where we also want NASA to come in and explain, because this is a major thing, you see?
Kenya's Supreme Court has until November 14th to rule on these petitions. If election results are upheld, Kenyatta's inauguration will take place on November 28th. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now go to Yambio with a traditional Zande song by Tutu. We have been listening to Tutu with the traditional Zande song. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to hear what you think about our show. You can find us on the web, South Sudan at voanews.com, or you can also look us up on Facebook, South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.